Cape Talk.
Food.
Joining me in studio today is Chef Henrico Grobler, who's a man with a chain of cooking awards behind his name and some pretty prime hotel postings on his CV. And since May, he's been the executive chef at the Marriott Hotel Crystal Towers, serving up some very complex but absolutely mouth-watering dishes that really are works of art on the plate. What really fascinates me about his story, though, is not just his obvious talent in the kitchen, but the fact that food wasn't actually his first career. He began his professional life as an engineer. So today he's here to chat to us about how he made that rather unusual career transition and to share his food philosophy, to answer any questions you might have about food styling, about making the most of seasonal ingredients, or perhaps about particular techniques you need some help with. You can call us on 021-446-0567 or leave your question on SMS 31567. Henrico, great to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
You started out as a polymer engineer. What did that job entail?
I don't know. I completed the studies, but I never practiced. Directly after that, I started as a sculler inside a hotel.
You started in the scullery. Okay.
Yes,
so
yes.
Literally washing dishes, peeling vegetables, perhaps the really bottom rung of the ladder. Had you always had a passion for food?
I didn't know what I was going in, but I knew that's all I wanted to do.
Okay. And, I mean, how difficult was it for you to have gone through all the studies, got the qualification behind you, and then go, actually, that's not for me. What I really want to do is work in food.
No, my dad's a qualified engineer, and my brother also went to study off civil, and I was second in line, so it was the most obvious thing to do. I finished it, and then it was either a hairdresser or a chef, but I really wanted to be a chef.
Okay. Well, you've become quite a chef by looking at the list of awards that you've won along the way, and we'll chat about a couple of those in a moment. But I'm just interested to know, along the way as a child growing up, were there people that you saw cooking? Was there a family member who helped you develop a love of food?
No, not at all. We come from Badar Sub Caledon area. When I was there, the hotel wasn't there, nor the casino. Nobody could help me. I saw a guy in a chef jacket once. And I thought, this oak must get a lot of women.
I'm laughing because I know how many hours the chefs are in the kitchen. Yeah, I don't think there's any time left for okay, so you made the decision, I'm going to follow this idea of going into food. You start working literally in the scullery section.
Yes.
How long did it take you to work your way up to actually working with food and cooking food?
No, it takes a while. The scullery thing was very, it was a short stint. The chef, Michael Bridgman at Erinvale Estate Hotel in Somerset West, he said to me, you have a good life ahead of you with your qualification. Why do you want to do this? I didn't know what I was sticking my head into. I don't regret one moment that I kept going, and I tried to push hard. I would say about 7 years.
Gosh, okay. And it is, I mean, he wasn't joking. Why would you give up a good life for this? It's a really tough life. I mean, talk to us about your average working day.
My problem is, because of the engineering background, my brain is a bit different. So I was thinking, I'm 4 years behind of studying. So if I do double shifts in the next 4 years, I will be par with the people who left school in my new career. And it became, 5 o'clock became lunchtime for me.
Sure. Okay, and today, is that still the case?
Yes, mostly it's like that. But it's for me, if you care so much what you do, time flies. It's not a sacrifice at all.
Henrico, obviously you've worked very hard. You've certainly paid your dues, but you clearly have the talent that was spotted, and you've worked in some of the absolute prime postings, from working at the 12 Apostles Hotel to the Southern Sun Cullinan. I think one of the more special experiences for you, I read, was your involvement in setting up the restaurant at Cavalli Estate.
Yes.
You actually helped design
everything from the ground up. We were there with Ground Zero. Mm-hmm. So about 2 years while I was working with Red Carnation 12 Apostles for the Tolmans, I 2 years before I finished, I worked with the architects, and together we built the hospitality department of Cavalli. So it was actually the first thing I entered in brand new, and it was just touch wood, but everything was key ready on day one. It's one of, for me, it's one of the only kitchens I've ever worked that was designed by a chef and not by a designer or architect that doesn't know hot from cold.
Yeah. I mean, you can't underestimate that. Obviously, the designing with the purpose in mind, you would think would be a no-brainer. Yeah. But for example, what did they get wrong that you got right at Equus and Cavalli?
It's like this. If we take 8 square meters away from the kitchen, we can add another 3-4 seated tables. Multiply that by so many days of trading, so many services, so we can make more money. But the hidden mathematics is that food still needs to come from somewhere.
And yeah, what that loss of that 8 square meters meant in the kitchen.
Yes, exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Because, I mean, they tend to be tight already, very hot working environments.
Yes, no windows.
Tempers run very high as well, I know from experience. The one thing I wanted to mention about the work at Cavalli is I believe that was the first Green Star rated culinary destination in this country. What does that mean?
It's a lot. It is a 6-star green building, so everything gets recycled. Mm-hmm. No air conditions, like using electricity, so most of the power came from the roof. All the excess water got through a 7-stage filter, and then we utilize it on the lawns and the vegetable gardens. And then also the cooling of the building was the man-made dam next to it. Sure. So it was pulling water from the bottom and then filtering it through. So there was a lot of things in terms of the lighting, how we set it up, and how we used energy. It was
the engineering background must have helped to a degree.
A little bit, but it was more things that frustrated you in the kitchen over the years of staying and going overseas and just taking all the knowledge together and within a budget come up with some brilliant ideas.
That really works. Okay. Exactly. Now, we've mentioned the awards that you've won over the years, and amongst them a FIFA Hospitality Excellence Award for the work you did during the World Cup 2010. What did that involve?
I was lucky to be the exec chef of the 2010 Soccer World Cup. So my job entailed the design of all the menus for the 64 games, and the layout of all the satellite kitchens for the VIP, VVIP, sure, Chairman's Lounge and Presidential Suites. So it was about a 95 million rand budget on food alone.
Wow.
And it was little sleep for a very long time, but at least they gave us about 8 months to set it up. So I was based in Sandton.
Mammoth task. I mean, what sort of food were they eating? When you said the VVIP experience, what's on the menu?
Okay, so the VIP was about 1,000 to 1,200 people. The VVIP was between 400 and 800, depending on how big the stadium was. And then the chairman and presidential suites, they were between 40 and about 70 max. Mm-hmm. And what we did was this, it was mostly European type of food. But coming to the end, I was fighting for when can we showcase our cuisine, because we've got 12 nationalities, and I fought really hard for it. So we did, like in Cape Town, we did Cape Dutch, Cape Malay. Mm. Durban, we did India. And then in Soccer City, we did Out of Africa. So then over the two semifinals and the finals, we combined everyone's cuisine. And I must tell you, I think that's where the award came from, for the thought process of taking Maui and throwing it out and giving them the maize beer as a welcoming drink.
Oh, my word. Okay.
With walkie-talkies and things like that, and smileys and normal pop and all that type of African food. So it was a shocker, but it was well taken.
I was going to say, the proof is in the eating.
Yes,
I assume they ate every bite.
Yes.
Okay. Now, 4 Culinary Olympic medals. I believe you headed up the Culinary Olympic team. What does that involve?
There's a national culinary team. It consists of 6 chefs that presents South Africa in green and gold at the Olympic Games and at the Culinary World Cup. So it's alongside the sport events as well. The difference between 6 chefs and a team of rugby players, we don't fill up a stadium on a Wednesday night. The criteria is two events. One is cold kitchen, so it's hot food displayed cold, and that's when you do some aspic work. You dip the food in gelatin to protect it from oxygen, which means the food can stand outside for 6 or 8 hours and it doesn't get perished at all. Mm-hmm. And then the one that we are a bit better in is the Restaurant of Nations. We've got 6 hours to prepare 115 starters, mains and desserts from nothing in a fishbowl.
That's got to be intimidating. When you're used to working under high pressure.
You focus, you see nothing. Yeah. You see nothing. You just get the job done and concentrate on not losing marks on any hygiene levels or prep issues or anything like that.
Phenomenal. If you've just tuned in late, my guest in studio is Chef Enrico Chroblar, who is currently the executive chef at the Marriott Hotel Crystal Towers, talking about a very long and illustrious career in kitchens around the country and beyond. If you've got a question for him, send an SMS to 31567 or give us a call on 021-446-0567. Somebody wants to know on the WhatsApp line, do you still believe that the chef's coat gets many women, or has your view changed?
No. That's a myth.
Okay. On a more serious note, a WhatsApp asking, is there a favorite food from your region growing up in the Bredasdorp-Caledon area that you still cook now?
Oh, I'm a Babuti type of guy. That's something, obviously my mother does a few numbers that I sometimes tell them I'll come home if she prepared this, otherwise they won't see me. But I'm very proud to be South African. I'm one of those Afrikaan chefs. But I enjoy our traditional food, the cook sisters, the Moscom fight. Mm. But Babuti is just one of those things, it just works.
I love the proudly South African theme running here, although looking at the recipes you've sent through, this is world-class stuff. It's really on another level. We're going to share the two recipes, but really they're two recipes that involve about 7 or 8 recipes within them, one for a main course and one for a dessert. And I'll ask Enrico to just summarize the dishes for us in a moment. But just to say that the recipes are going up on the Cape Talk website and Facebook page. We'll also share the link to them on Twitter if you're interested in reading them. I'm going to start with the main course dish that you've brought along, the cardamom orange cured salmon, which goes with an avocado panna cotta, a wasabi mayonnaise, peanuts, pickled cucumber, and roe vinaigrette. I'm not joking when I say that the recipe extends to 5 pages. How long does it take you to prepare a dish like that, and how many people would you have working on it?
Yes, first of all, I want to correct you. It's a starter.
It's a
cold dish. If we serve cold mains, I'll be in trouble.
Okay.
If you start a new menu, the first 2 days is most probably the most stressful thing. But once you start up, you have enough mise en place or preparation that will carry you for 3 days, which means you don't do everything every day. You just do certain things. So I would say from start to finish by yourself, it's going to take me most probably 2.5 hours. But then I'll have enough for about 25 to 30 people.
Okay, and as you say, obviously you wouldn't be doing it all alone. You would have a whole team, one working on the mayonnaise, somebody else on the curing of the salmon, etc. I'm noticing that in all these recipes, when you're using setting agents, there's a difference. One of them calls for gelatin, another one calls for agar. Agar, I think somewhere else, I saw xanthan gum.
Yes.
Where do you use which?
For me, I'm not one of these chemical guys. Xanthan gum is an absolutely natural product. You can buy it off the shelf, like Pick and Pay or health stores or anything like that. That is a gum. It's a stabilizer, so it is people that is gluten intolerant utilize that in bread. Agar is just a seaweed that you need to set at 90 degrees. Nowadays with dietary requirements with gelatin and things like that, sometimes it helps you a little bit, but you can't replace everything with one item. Otherwise it would have been salt. But but yeah, it is, it's really available. You can order it now from an order list. In my opinion, modern kitchen cannot go without in nowadays.
Okay. And then, I mean, the dessert just made my stomach start rumbling to read caramelized banana, milk crumble, salted caramel ice cream, savory fudge toffee, and macadamia nut grate on top. Again, incredibly complex. The recipe's running to 3-4 pages once you've got through all these processes. Yes. And it really seems this recipe to me jumps out as being sort of a mix of the old-fashioned and the very modern. You've got really old-fashioned flavors of the caramel and the toffee and the ice cream mixed in with foam creams and all kinds of different textures.
Yeah.
Do you aim for that specifically?
No, it was, that is just utilizing three ingredients, caramel, salt and banana, and then make a dessert with so many elements. Maybe it is, if I can use the word, the recipe or the dishes maybe cocky in terms of look at what no, what I can do with banana. So that is like utilizing the peel, everything. We've got our own banana bacon there, which is fully halal. We cut the skin, we dry it, we use the peels to infuse milk, and that's where we get the foam from. So it's not to, you can either set milk in a gel or you can do it aerated, which is a foam or a spoon, where you get nice equipment nowadays to aid us with that. So it was just taking banana and then sugar and salt and see how many items I can get out of one ingredient and just showcase it on a plate.
Can't wait to see it on a plate. I don't think I will ever have the skill to actually make it myself, but there's wishful thinking. I mean, this is highly complex food, and it's going to look beautiful on the plate. Yes. How important is the styling in the overall reception of a dish?
Yeah, for me, we were taught that flavor is key. But I'm thinking, yes, flavor is key, and I go for absolute flavor, because after the third bite, your creation has been destroyed, because food is like this. It's got shelf life. You cannot actually hang it on the wall and keep it there forever. So for me, the first impressions must last. So the meal must come there. Nowadays, with the social media and people, like, diners are better chefs than the cooks in the kitchen, but they take pictures and they post it. So you need to be spot on for each and every plate. You don't know who's coming to dine with you, where it's going to go. And it's not nationally, it's internationally nowadays. So for me, the plate presentation is, I'm always pushing for it. I'm one of those guys. I want someone to sit and receive that plate and say, how did he do this?
Yeah.
That is that impression. And then the second one is when you hit a double whammy, when he puts it in his mouth and he goes like, wow, it's lingering. I don't want it to finish. If you can achieve that with the service, I think you're going to be on top.
You've done it, yeah. I mean, social media's got to make your life that much harder, because you can't risk one bad meal going out because inevitably that person's going to pick up their phone, snap a photograph and complain somewhere.
Yes, I think chefing has changed a lot from where we were, where it's now. The thing is, I'm one of those guys, I like to be in control. I can set the gas. I can know how long it's going to be there. I can measure the temperature. But what someone's going to write in post, that I can't control. And if you get called in the next day, you need to have an answer.
My guest in studio, Henrico Grobla, the executive chef at the Marriott Hotel Crystal Towers. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back with more of his insight into food and a couple of your questions coming through on the email. Don't forget, you're also welcome to call us on 021-446-0567.
Cape Talk, SMS Pepper on 31567.
Henrico, a question for you coming in from Lois, and I love this. Lois says, what do you do if a guest wants a dish done in a way that you know will ruin it? She goes on to say, I have a friend who insists on ordering steak very well done, and I always cringe because I'm sure the chef must be swearing in the kitchen. How difficult is that if customers want you to do something with their meal that you know is actually going to spoil it?
I'll be honest with you, I'm in this tender part of my life that there's no egos or anything. The client comes first. There's certain reasons why that person maybe would eat it that way. For me, I'll lead and we'll prepare it as close as possible. What is really difficult is someone had something somewhere and they walked in an a la carte restaurant and like, can you make me this? Oh. That is a difficult part, because you're going to do not 100%, because there's other tables as well and you're just not going to get it right. I try to avoid that, but otherwise, if it's on the menu, it's on the cart, whatever you want removed, if it's possible, we can do. Yes,
okay.
Yes.
No. Then Tony asking on the SMS line about which other local chefs you particularly admire and why.
I know he's a big name, so it doesn't... it's Luke Del Roberts. I know him very well in a personal capacity. We've traveled overseas together for 2 weeks. For someone that has achieved such greatness as him and still be as down to earth as he is... if I can get a half a day in his mind, I will be I'll be ecstatic.
Okay, yeah. That's been our impression when we've had him as a guest, I must agree. Interesting question here from Susie, who wants to know your opinion on South African palates. She says, are our South African palates maturing as we become exposed to more international cuisine, or do you think we are still hung up on the meat and three veg with sugar added to everything?
I would say if that guy from Bloemfontein comes, it's the second one with the meat and foie gras. But I definitely think we're up there traveling internationally and also serving international guests, and the comments that they give on our food, I don't think we as South Africans or who lives in South Africa has to put two or three steps backwards to say we're not there yet now. You people do realize what you're eating nowadays, so I agree.
We're very lucky in having access to fantastic fresh produce here as well that we, I think, often take for granted until you go overseas and see, like, actually, wow, what's on offer there is not holding a candle to what we have here.
The easiest way to do a comparison is to look at a hotel's breakfast in South Africa and then go overseas and minus the starch and see what's left over.
Yeah, good point. Llewellyn wanting to know, is there a particular dish that has inspired you in your career that you've most enjoyed?
I must be honest with you, I can't even remember half of the stuff I've cooked. I must say, if there is a dish, a classical dish is beef rossini. It is where you've got beef fillet, you've got brioche bread, you've got foie gras, you've got truffles, and you've got onions.
Wow.
It was designed by the chef that he presented to his king after he's won a war, and it was a massive slaughter. So that was his gift, and it became world renowned. Nowadays, a bit difficult to get the foie gras, but we can replace it with chicken livers and think.
Okay, so there is a way around.
Yeah, there is a way.
Yeah. I mean, I was interested hearing you describe how you use everything in the banana, for example. That is very much a trend now that we don't waste that. A lot of stuff that used to end up in the bin, we're finding ways of repurposing and using. Do you find that customers are starting to demand that of you as a chef?
It's very difficult if someone comes in and is like, but why do you repeat this twice on a menu, especially in winter time? Because winter for us in hotels is much slower. So you need to be smarter, maybe call the same thing different names, spread out on your menu, or try not to mention it. For me, with now the water usage, energy saving, electricity, things like that, I'm starting to put my head around it to try and save and be bringing my part to it as well. So I hope that diners is more lenient on us if they see these things, especially fish is a big problem nowadays. Seafood, last year December they returned 30 containers full of prawns. I'm sorry, it's not on the menu. I don't make them, I cook them. So it is if people do research and they see things, I think where they can punish us is if we use things on the red list, or we're using foie gras or something like that, or there's some bluefin tuna on the menu, definitely write about it because we need to protect that. But the rest of the stuff, I think sometimes they also struggle to find things in shops. Imagine chefs.
Chef, it's been wonderful having you with us today. Thanks for coming in, and all the best for your new... It's a relatively new posting at the Marriott Crystal Towers. Yes. You've only been there a couple of months. Have you had a chance to sort of put your stamp on the menu
yet? Oh, yes, we've changed a lot, and I've been enjoying it. There's a great team that's there. Got a wonderful general manager that believes in my thoughts for the restaurant and the food offering. So with that type of support, you can only move forward faster.
Chef Enrico Grobler, great to meet you. And if you would like to taste the food that you've been listening to, you need to pop along to the Marriott Hotel Crystal Towers.